you're here tonight. I've been excited about this service and really just seeing pictures and hearing stories about Honduras again. Honduras is a very special place for a lot of people in our church. I took some time this afternoon and I looked through this precious book that Jenny Snook prepared for us about work of witness trips in our church. And looking back to the days before I was around here, you guys, some of you went to Nazarene Indian Bible College, I believe, out west, and there's pictures of there. And then since I've been here, starting in 2004, a group of, I believe it was 18 of us, went to Puerto Rico in July. And we thought, we'll never go back to Puerto Rico in July again. We'll go another time. But that's the first trip that I've had an opportunity to be a part of in this church. And just think back to how precious that trip was in my heart and my spirit in seeing a little bit more of the church around the world, the Church of the Nazarene, and being involved, and our church becoming involved the next year. I think there were 8 of us that went to the Bahamas after the hurricane there, and were involved in helping to rebuild a church. I just can see Snook on his knees laying tile floor down at that project, and I think that's where I got the name Left Lane Wayne. I'm not sure, but driving that old blue bus in the wrong lane, and it's just hard to remember every time you pulled out, you know. It's just hard to remember going the other lane when you're supposed to. And then the next year, as I recall, 2006 was the first trip to Tegucigalpa in Honduras, and that has begun a long time of ministry in Honduras from this church family. Snook has been there how many times now, Snook? What's that? Yeah, something like that. Somewhere around 15, I don't know, something like that, but 14. And many people from our church have been to Honduras, and that's really been the country that our church has been most involved with over the years, and we're thrilled with that. 3 of our church family there a few weeks ago, and tonight we're going to hear their story. So looking forward to it. Come and share with us as we hear more about Honduras.
I'm sporting a Honduras shirt tonight. One of our interpreters is wearing one of these, and I thought, that looks like Honduras. It's kind of their colors, blue and white for their flag. And we got back to Tegucigalpa, and I thought, I need to pick one of those up. And I happened to run across one of those. So anyway, thank you for coming out. We felt your support way before the trip. And, you know, we really have felt prayers behind every trip we go down there. And this trip was no different in that sense. And your support tonight is, you guys have heard a lot of the same synopsis, basically, of how our trips have gone. You're still interested to see how this one is different or just to see what the ministry is like. When I went looking into going to this trip, I thought, you know, how is this trip going to be different? I don't have a map up here yet, but if we could come up with a map somewhere, it would be... we have, if that screen behind you is the entire Honduras trip, or all of Honduras, the map of Honduras, we would probably be down below that bowl on the ground, and we would probably be over into this area. We're kind of on the southeastern side of Honduras. That's a very general spot. We'll get a map at some point and show you. We have gone up that direction before. We usually fly into the southern part of Honduras, to Tegucigalpa. It's the capital city, but it's not the largest city. There's one up north. Never been done a trip up north. Other teams have, but I don't know that we have, Snook. Have we ever gone that way? Okay. We've never actually taken one of our churches. Our church has never gone to the northern part of Honduras. And when you get into the southern part of Honduras, you get away from the... You get away from the tropics, it's a little bit cooler, and then we head east and we go into the mountains. And I was telling Crystal prior to her going the first time a number of years ago, I said, man, honey, there's a section of this drive east when you go from Tegucigalpa to Don Lee. I said, it's literally like driving through parts of Idaho and Montana. And I remember I wasn't convincing her at all that this had anything, any look at all like Honduras or like Montana or Idaho. But there is a section of Montana that you're looking for elk because there's ponderosa-looking pines. Yes, there's an occasional palm tree in the middle of these pines, but it looks like draws that you would find in the western United States. And so in this map right here, doesn't look anything like our screen did, does it? Yeah, I'm not really sure. Okay, here, that's Tegucigalpa. Can I turn and grab a mic? I'm just going to grab a mic. Do I have to? Yeah, I know. Okay. So right here, Tegucigalpa, where she's got the spinner going, that's the capital city. San Pedro Sula up in the top left-hand corner is the other major city. That's the largest city up there, but that hits all of that upper coast. We've never been up that way. We always go into Tegucigalpa. Right above Tegucigalpa, to the left right there, is a town called Cumayagua. That is where we went the first time we did a medical trip. So we came back and we were talking about that city. Then we went to Don Lee, which is to the right of Tegucigalpa, down by the Nicaraguan border, right in there. Then we went down to, it's not on the coast, it's not here, but down by this San Lorenzo, down towards the bottom by the ocean. We'd never got quite to the ocean, but we had done our third medical trip there. This time we went back to Don Lee. And from there, we kind of did some town, but some mountain trips. There's one that's not there, but it would be closer out in this no man's land over here in the green, but right along the Nicaraguan border, a new developing town out that way. But this time we had tackled seven clinics. It's potentially Bob and Evelyn Shea's last year. They are planning on retiring officially at the end of this year. And they've made plans to kind of go that way. So we think it's more official. They will be back to Honduras, but mostly just to come with a team and be part of a team. But they've been there 30 years. They've actually had a number of celebrations from the district down there acknowledging that this is their last year. So we knew that this wasn't their last medical team. They're doing one right now, I think. It's 2 weeks after we were going to be there. They were starting another one. So they're up in the San Pedro Sula area at the top of Honduras. And I think they're planning another one sometime in April or May, but with different groups. But this one we went and saw, officially we saw, I think, 1,428 people. And the best part of that Crystal was sharing on Sunday morning last week was that 94, I think it was, came to know Christ for the first time. And another 20-something, 28, 24, rededicated their lives to Christ. So I'm kind of running through the logistics of the trip. We follow the same pattern that we've done before in the sense that we go to a clinic. We have typically 3, 4, 5 pastors that go along with us. After they come in, they have a registration table. They're brought right in with the nurses. And then they're seeing any of the providers. And then from there, they're mostly often going to the pastors. And they run through the Rubik's Cube type message blocks that they can fold them 5 or 6 different ways and basically explain the message of Christ, the gospel message. And pray with each one of them, ask them if they want to accept the Lord as their Savior, and it has certainly grown. And there's a response. It seems simple, and yet there is a response to that. And then from there, they go to the pharmacy. If they've accepted Christ for the first time, I know they were handing them a Bible every time that happened. And we went through boxes of Bibles. We had boxes of Bibles, and we had extras, so we'd give them to the pastors there. It is growing. Definitely growing, and I think this time, that the thing that struck me this time differently than other times is that Don Lee area from before. Mike just kicked in more. That Don Lee area actually is much cleaner than it was before. The streets are swept. I think they're putting pavement down on all the side streets. And it's not all like that, believe me, but it's, I would say that it's probably a 20% improvement in the last 5 years. That's drastic, though. Enough that I go back a year later and I'm thinking, this has changed a little bit. And as part of that, I think of the window of how responsive people have been. And the time right now in Honduras, people are still hungry. They're still hungry because they don't have much. But I got the sense that there's an urgency to that, because if I go back there 20 years from now, I'm not sure that window will still be open in terms of why do we need this. And so right now it's a great outreach, but I'm not sure if that would be the same response if their economy continues to kick up. Definitely seems like there's a tick in their economy. So anyway, that's what I was thinking of at the time we were going through it and seeing it. We would go in and out of the town of Don Lee every day. And they're definitely doing a lot of good things. And they'll probably talk to you about some of the, I don't know, Cofradia Church maybe or something. But there's definitely outreaches into the community there. The pastors are thriving. Logistically, we have the seminary in the Tegucigalpa area. That's where we fly in and stay every time. Actually, we have, I think, a picture in the back somewhere where there was a group that's standing on the steps at the seminary there. I think that one of the groups, I didn't go on this one, but they worked on the seminary itself. And but from there, they're training pastors. They've been training pastors. They train pastors, I think, on a daily basis there. And then on a monthly basis, when we went to Don Lee, we then traveled over to Santa Maria. Snook's been there a ton of times, but that's a place that was kind of a hub at the base of some of the mountains. And they have a training center in this standard church that we build, which is probably not as wide as this is, not as long as this is wide. So it's probably about the size of our stage, a little bit bigger. And but they come and they train pastors there once a month for about 4 or 5 days in 1 week. And that 4 or 5 days, pastors are coming out of the mountains to come down and learn there. And then from there, they split and go back up to their churches for the next month and teach and preach. And from there, it's growing. There still is, of course, a need for churches to be built. There's always going to be medical need the way their structure is set up. And I would say that right now is, from what Bob tells me, that's being challenged a lot. The district has, not the district, but the whole Caribbean region is being restructured a little bit. The main coordinator for that, I think, is in Guatemala. And if you look at the resources, Bob has told me that the resources are being redistributed. They want to redistribute resources. So Honduras might have 20 trips a year. It's well run, it's well oiled and greased, and it's effective. Churches are just growing like crazy right now. And what they're wanting to do is limit that to no more than 2 trips per country. So I think great intentions of trying to get stuff to Guatemala, get stuff to other countries in the Caribbean region that are being missed or aren't getting the resources like that. But in terms of Honduras, Bob says, hey, look, right now there's a chance that it'll be cut back drastically in the future. So that's kind of where the whole thing is going right now down there, trying to figure out how to get the same result in other countries as they've gotten in Honduras, where it's just an open field for growth. So, and then part of that is good, I think, in the sense that they're trying to transfer some of that responsibility to the locals and to the pastors. They have a guy who's going to probably be replacing Bob as the main coordinator. And Snook would know this gentleman. His name is Ephraim. He's a pastor from the north. He's from up by San Pedro Sula. He has 3 mission churches there. And he has been coming down. He's likely going to be the liaison for medical teams and construction teams coming in the future. He speaks decent English, and he knows, of course, Spanish. And he's been traveling with our construction groups and with our medical groups every time. So he's very familiar with the process, and they're trying to turn over the reins a little bit, have some locals take it and run with it. So that's kind of where we are with that. There's been a lot of fun times, a lot of very interesting patients. I'll tell you one story, and then I'm going to turn the mic over. I don't know if you'll even see a picture of this. There's the interpreter with my shirt on. Anyway, but one lady, she was probably, I think she was 69 years old, but she had the energy of about a 30-year-old, maybe. She came and she was really hobbling, but she was a fast hobble, if you know what I'm talking about. One of those ladies that just had so much energy. She came hobbling in and she sits down. I said, and she had a knee issue or something. I asked her about if she was goalie or if she was a soccer player. And she looked at me like it was lost interpretation. And the interpreter repeated again, and she got a big smile. And she's shaking her fist at me and laughing. And I said something about it at the end. I said, well, you know, good luck. No soccer for 2 weeks at the end of the whole thing. And I said, if I had a chance, if you wanted to, I'd race you right now because you're hurt, you know. And she turned around and she goes, you want to fight? And I said, she was all fun. It was all fun and games, obviously. But we ended up arm wrestling. It wasn't something you always expect, but people are, in a sense, the same. They have the same needs. We all have our unique personalities. But no matter where I've gone, it seems like people are people. They want love. They want interaction, and she was part of the local church there, and it's just neat to see how people grow and how they can sharpen each other and interact with someone in a totally different language. And just there was a lot of fun stories there, but I'm going to turn it over and let Kathy talk.
Can you hear me? Okay. As Jeff was talking, I was thinking, so yeah, I don't know if you saw the picture a minute ago of the little runway. I'll get on a big plane and fly into that little runway in this bowl surrounded by homes and buildings. I will ride on the back of a pickup truck down through the mountain and all kinds of adventurous things in Honduras that don't really scare me, but this scares me. I don't like talking in front of y'all, but I'm going to try to get through this. So, yes, I was thinking of the many dangers, toils, and snares that we were spared of, and never really felt fear, but I know there are things. We didn't fall off the mountain. You know, there's no guardrails down there, and some of our trips were quite lengthy through the mountains, and our plane was fine and everything. All of our flights were great. I did get awoken the first night by loud popping sounds, and I'm thinking, this is gunshots. They probably took out the guard at our gate, and now I don't know what's happening. But I later realized it was fireworks because it was so close to the new year. But I did for a minute think it really was gunshots. It is a, you know, it's a really crazy area and there is a lot of crime and things like that happen. But I was reflecting on just, there's so many pieces to put a trip like this together. All the planning of the clinics, all the scheduling, and Bob and Evelyn, I have just probably can't imagine all the work that they put into this. Coordinating all the pastors, all the interpreters. You know, it takes a lot to make it all flow well every day of the week. And we were always picking up interpreters each day, and we'd pull into a gas station or wherever, and they'd be right there, and they'd jump in, and on our way we'd go, and everything just went really well. And just somebody to keep the vehicles in good shape, just something I think of, you know, tires, brakes, things like that, that you really need to be in good condition for the places that we went. And then the medicine, lots of medicine, has to be ordered, organized, inventoried, sorted, counted, packaged, all of that. That's a big part of it all. And then just our daily life there, our food, our accommodations, and everything. We're just well taken care of. Evelyn, she takes care of making sure we're fed 3 meals a day, and just everything runs really well. And it just, all those pieces, but it just takes a lot of people, and it all worked really well. And I was just overwhelmed during the trip, too, just watching the body of Christ work together. Our team, the local pastors, all the other locals that show up to help, the interpreters. We would set up the clinic, and really in minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes, get through 150 to 300 people a day, tear down quickly. It was just very orderly, and it all went really well. And I just really have to give a shout out to the doctors and nurses. They really spend time with the people. They really listen to the people. They really care about the people, about each person that came to them. They made each person feel worthy, and it was just a blessing to watch that. Just like Jeff was saying, he joked with people. And I know I know Rob did that. And yeah, they just really made some good connections with people. So my job this trip was pharmacy. After helping to set up, I would wait for our first patient. They'd bring me their little prescription, and I'd pass it on to our pharmacist, Patty, who came from Iowa. She was a widow, and this is just something she started doing now, going on these trips, and she did a great job. She was very organized, and she really knew how to run the pharmacy. So after she would fill, like an antibiotic or something like that, we would add our Tylenol or vitamins or whatever, something simple that we could put in their bag that they might need. And then I got to give out the very yucky-tasting anti-parasite pills. So some of them knew what they were and didn't want them, but the kids especially, but they would take them, and then we'd give them a lollipop to try to help with that awful taste. We gave out toothbrushes, and if time allowed, I usually let the kids pick their color, because I thought, you know, how many times do some of these kids get something new for one thing? And how many times do they get to actually, like, make a choice, maybe, when they're getting something new? So they seem to like that. And occasionally I help somebody with eyeglasses, and they were always really grateful. That was kind of fun to watch them actually put them on and, like, yeah, I can see, you know. And like you'd probably expect, the conditions there of the homes and the schools, they're very poor. Jeff was saying, you know, it is getting better. But when you're in the remote areas, it's very poor. And the poverty rate is, I think, in the high 60%, somewhere around there. I know in one of the schools, the chairs on the desks were pretty broken, like several of them. And, like, this is where they go to school every day. And it's hard to see those things and not compare with how our schools are. You know, our kids want for nothing in school. And like our kids are probably thinking about today, like what new device or game they might want, or the Super Bowl, or actually in Mifflinburg right now, it's wanting a hydro flask, a water container. It's just the thing. And there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but you know, you try to think, what are these Honduran children thinking about? And, oh, that's my friend Catherine. We had the same name. you know, they're probably thinking about, you know, maybe when can I go start picking coffee and make some money? Or maybe they're not feeling well from some unaddressed medical condition or something. That they're just, their lives are just a lot different and a lot harder, as you can imagine. And I noticed this on the last trip too. I never see any toys. They come for hours to these clinics waiting, and they never have any toys with them. If there was a playground, that was great, but you know, our moms with babies, they have diaper bags full of toys. You just don't see any of that, and that just stood out to me too. So I say that I left a piece of my heart at each clinic location, but the biggest piece was at a place called Azabache. It's a couple hours up in the mountain, on the top of the mountain. The people there are coffee pickers, really hard lives, a lot of aches and pains from doing that, and there were some real sad stories from that clinic, which I didn't get to share in, hear the stories myself, because I don't speak Spanish, but pharmacy, you just didn't have that connection in that time. The doctors and nurses had those opportunities, so you'll probably hear from them about the stories of the people. But I know that there's no church there, and I just have such a heart that there could be a church there, thinking if there's a church there, the people then would be able to minister to these really sad story people that really need help. But I know there's land, and I know they've started, so that's just something that I hope happens real soon. So a highlight for me was watching the pastoral team. I think that's what that picture is right there, actually. It's just really a blessing to see the pastor's heart for their people there in Honduras. They really love on their people well. They just, every day, they just pour into spending hours meeting with each person and just want to, you know, minister to their spiritual needs as well as their medical and physical needs at the clinics, too. So it's just a real blessing to watch that and you know, to see the... They would often write a heart on their paper, they all come through with a little paper, and that's what comes to the pharmacy, and they would put a heart on the paper if the person got saved. So when I would see those papers, then I would see a heart, you know, it just really blessed me. And then sometimes they'd come with their new Spanish Bibles, and I knew that they were probably new Christians too. So that was, it was just neat to see that part of it all. So while there were some really serious medical issues treated, some people were pretty healthy, and some only got vitamins. But my prayer is that all receive the love of Christ, compassion and caring, that they all saw Jesus in us. That when their vitamins and their other meds are gone, the love and compassion they received will not be forgotten. And that they'll remember that people from America care about them, and that it's because of Jesus. So I'm just humble and grateful for the opportunity that he allowed me to be a part of it. And thank you for all of you who helped financially, prayer support. Anytime you fill up those little prescription bottles with coins, just any part you played, thank you so much. You're all a part of it. And I'll just close with this scripture. Some words from Jesus, you know, and he said, "For I was a stranger, and you welcomed me," because these people were strangers to us. "I was sick, and you visited me," and some of them were very sick. "All were welcomed on the clinics, and all were given what we had to give as unto him. Our service is ultimately not to the poor, but to Christ himself." So thank you.
I loved traveling with Kathy and, of course, Jeff, but it was really neat to hear their insights and I always loved hearing Kathy's insights for the day and what stuck out to her. And it was nice. We would try to have a kind of a debriefing time as the team at the end of the day. And just to hear what God was sharing with each of the team members was really neat. And realizing that, you know, we came from all over the country and joined this team together. And it's just really special how God brings people together. And some of those people were going through really hard times themselves. And the Lord allowed them to be able to step out of their norm and go to a place like this. And it was a revival in their hearts. And that was really beautiful to see. Kathy had mentioned the pharmacist who had lost her husband and was still in that grief process somewhat. And one of the nurses had lost her job and lost her mom, and just a lot of pain that the Lord can still work through. And there was one other lady who had been in the military. She had retired because of health reasons, and it was very much on her mind. Anytime she would talk, she would tell stories about the military. And one thing that she repeatedly said was, "I realized on this trip that God can still use me." And I think that's really beautiful how the Lord not only ministers through what we have to offer, but also ministers back to us. And I feel really privileged to be able to go on these trips. I feel like, for me, it is just such a joy to be able to see what God is doing and how He's working and saving souls and how much He cares about each person. And I guess from a nurse's standpoint, this trip, I've thought of it each time, but I think when you're going and you're seeing so many patients, and I just personally like to kneel down in front of them or squat down so I can be face-to-face with them as they're sitting in a chair, to get eye level with them and really try to hear them, even though I don't understand their Spanish very well. Each time I go, I have to learn new phrases in Spanish, so it stretches me, but I'm asked to do triaging, but sometimes we have interpreters, and sometimes we sort of have to be on our own, and sometimes, so it gets challenging, but it's really fun. And so one of the things that we did differently this time was all of the nurses, we tag team, so there was four of us, and two of us at a time would ask all the questions, and while the other ones got the blood pressures, temperatures, weights, that kind of thing. So we would team up and try to get people flowing through. And this time was the first time that we actually had to ask the people, "What are your symptoms?" A lot of times registration would do that so that they could have that already on our paper when they came to us. So for me, that was interesting, and that was fun. But it also hit my heart in a whole new way, because I realized, and I think I mentioned this the other Sunday, but people really trusted us. And when I would ask them, "What are your symptoms? How can we help you today? What can we do for you today?" People really just opened up. And I guess I knew that they did because they came to clinic. But we had people who obviously were very sick, some who were just there because they were curious, some wanted vitamins for their kids. But some people, there was a number of ladies who were suffering with depression, and they were able to tell us that. And it was very special for me just to be able to stop what I was doing and say, "We're just going to pray. We're just going to pray for you today. You're going through deep waters. You just lost your husband, or you just lost your son. Your son was just killed last week." And when I look at these faces, I'm reminded of their stories and how they're people just like us that need Christ to fill the deepest parts of their hearts. We did see some, I know I referred earlier, there was some deep wounds that was more than I've ever seen on a trip before. For whatever reason, I'm not sure, but one man had, I think it was 10 years, he'd had a wound in his leg that was untreated. His leg was black. He had no feeling. And so another nurse and I tried to, you know, take off the old skin, bandage it, wrap it. It smelled terribly. it was a little different experience. And the poor guy, he sat there and grinned at us with no teeth. And he just grinned. And we were just amazed. It wasn't a good thing that he wasn't feeling what we were doing to him. But the church was able to come around him. And we were able to give money to the pastor of that church so that he could continue treatment. We gave the pastor medications so that he could follow up with him and give him the medications as needed. We gave him more wound supplies, sent a huge bag of wound supplies home with him. And it was just another way that the Lord used the body of Christ and used the church to meet these needs that really did. They were life-altering for these people. When we went to Azavachi, which is 2.5 hours up in the mountains, Kathy had mentioned it. We were there the first time 3 years ago, and people looked at us like we had two horns coming out of our heads. I think after I had finally figured out, you know, why are all these kids crying when they see us? Why do they look scared? I asked one of the older gentlemen through an interpreter, have you had a team come to this area like us? Have you had anyone like us come to you before? And he was probably in his 60s and said, no, never. And then it hit me. I think these people have never seen white skin in in person. So we were able to go back there 3 years later then, this trip, and that was really neat. I think we saw 315 people that day, so it was a very busy day. But one story that Jeff had was he had seen a lady, he saw a lady this trip who told him 3 years ago there was a team that came and they gave me medicines for my heart. And she was able to continue her heart medication. Her blood pressure was great. And that was pretty fantastic. She was able to go 2.5 hours away as needed to follow up with her prescription medicine. But one lady, this is just another story of how the church was Christ to these people. At this church, or at the school in Azavachi that does not have a church, but we're hoping that it will be built soon, there was a lady there who had a wound similar to the man that we helped in the first clinic. Again, it was necrotic. It was terrible, terrible, terrible wound. Her husband, we found out through the whole process of helping her, is very sick. Her niece, her kids had moved away, so it was just her and her husband in this village way up in the mountains. She did have nieces that brought her to clinic, and they told us she had had a wound for 25 years. In her foot. And it was awful. It was so terrible. And I didn't know about it at first, at the beginning. I was still triaging people through. But the wound nurse that was there with us, she started trying to treat it. And this lady could actually feel everything she was doing. And she was just very stoic. You could tell it was very, she didn't normally show emotion, but after a while, tears started streaming down her cheeks. And so Kathy came and got me and said, you need to come help Karen. This is not good. So I went back and immediately just gave her all the pain medicine that I could safely give her. And kind of tried to figure out a way of how we could get some numbing medicine on her wound just to treat it. She ended up, we stopped trying to debride this wound. It was so deep and hurting this lady so terribly. So we told her she has to get to the hospital and have surgery on this leg to get it completely washed out. And she just started crying, and she said, there's no way. So the church stepped in. And this is just a God thing. We gave money to the pastor, or the lady who will be the pastor of this. She has like a home church there now. So we gave the money to her to take the lady down to Dan Lee, which was 2.5 hours on little dirt roads down to Dan Lee, where the nearest clinic was. And the next day, we had gone up to another clinic, and we were coming back. It was at the end of the day. We were all tired, and we went to pull into our hotel, and I saw the niece of this lady, and I thought, wow, here's this girl that I, you know, we just served yesterday, Clara Panazavachi. Well, then Bob came to us, and he said, I have an incredible story to tell you. There was one of our team members, her luggage had not come. She had only gotten one suitcase or something, and one of her suitcases were lost. So Tegucigalpa is 2.5 hours from Dan Lee, which is 2.5 hours from Azavachi. So we're talking, you know, quite like a five-hour road trip. Bob had gone down to Tegucigalpa while we were at this clinic and was getting medication at the pharmacy, picking up luggage, things like that. And he got a call from the pastor, and he said, are you still in Tegucigalpa? And Bob said, yes. He said, can you go to the pharmacy and get such and such and such a medicine for this lady with the terrible wound? Because the way the system works there is if you can get to a clinic, when you get to the clinic, the doctor will tell you what medications you need, if you need IV fluid, if you need saline, and then you have to go and you have to go to a store and get your own medicine, and then go back to the doctor and pay him to give it to you. So that's how broken their system is. They called Bob, and they said, do you happen to be near a pharmacy? He said, I'm standing at a pharmacy right now. So Bob was able to get all the supplies that this lady needed 5 hours away. And he brought the medications back and was able to give it to her niece, who then took it to the clinic, and they were able to save her leg. They said normally one of the translators told us normally it's too much of a bother, and so the medical facilities just say, we will just amputate. We're not going to worry about trying to clean up any wounds or save anything. And so that was just a neat story of how God uses his church and his timing and how he really cares about each person and their needs and where they're at. And so this lady, as far as we know, her leg was able to be saved because of that. So those are just a couple of the stories that come to mind as I think about of how the church works together. And I know this church had sent checks to each of the pastors as love gifts. And so at the end of every day, we would pray over the pastors and give them a love gift from this church. And that meant so much to them. And I wish you all could have seen them and been a part of that in person. It really was so meaningful to them to have your support and to have your love. And so, yeah. Do you want to just have a time of prayer? Okay. I know that we've talked about missions and we've talked about Honduras and many different times, but I guess I just want to open it up to you guys if you have any questions about the process or the people or any.
It'll be interesting to see which medical trips continue there. We go from year to year right now. I've talked to Rob, and he's the other physician there. He's kind of headed it up. He's from Washington State. And then there's a gentleman named Chris. To me, he looks just like Ron Clark in our church. I don't know if you've seen the picture of Chris there, the other provider, but he looks like him and talks like him, has the same type of quiet disposition, but they kind of go by what's the next need, who's putting together the next trip, and then they just kind of send out emails to let us know when the next one has been. It's been on a yearly basis for the most part. There's nothing set up right now to answer your question for the next trip, but they do intend to do another medical trip. The way Bob has looked at it is to say, they can't stop designated resources. So he's hoping to still continue a lot of money. If you designate it, hey, this is going to this particular need in Honduras, they will still put it toward that need. But in terms of people who want to do a trip, they probably have a whole bunch of them already listed at Kansas City. And you have to kind of upload your project to a, like Saheed did down in Guyana and Suriname. They have to upload the project and justify the need and what's going on and what have you for each project. So every country has to do that. I don't know how many are already there for Honduras, but likely those ones, they will limit how many are there. But if there's a known need, and he said, I will try to make people aware of the needs. And that churches such as ours that have done trips before can designate it specifically for a certain trip. And he's hopeful that won't stop anything. So
Bob was also said he wanted the medical teams to be exempt from that. He was trying to get the medical
teams. Yeah, she said that Bob's trying to get medical teams exempt from that. One, medical trips, a church, there's a lot of need for churches. Like they were talking about Azavache up there in the mountains. That first time, I can't remember the exact number, but we probably saw 160, 180 people, maybe 200, because that's what we were averaging. But up there, I'm not sure if we had a full 200 the first time we went 3 years ago. When we went back this time, it was 315. And the church is just booming. And they have bought a site. They have, every December, they have a grader come through the roads because it's right after the rainy season and everything's all messed up. So they have a grader come through, probably two or three graders in a row, and they grade the roads. They drive all the roads. And if you have submitted a permit for a building site, they will detour off the road and grade a flat spot for a house. But they only do it in December, because that's the only time they take these graders up and do the roads every year. So they have had that graded since, I'm not sure if it was this December or last December, but the church has been growing so quickly, they're ready to build a church. And Bob told me, he said, there's always needs. Bob lets you know of any needs that are out there, and he's a good networker with that, but he said they need the money. I think it's a $10,000 church like it normally is. They're sitting on go. He said, this particular church is so interested in building a church, they want to forego the labor if possible, if that's necessary. They just want to build it. They have enough people in their church that have always all said, we will do it all. So, but that's where they are with that. Medical-wise, he's trying to make them exempt because instead of $10,000, it's about maybe three. Part of our fee this time for going, they build in an extra $100. Well, you do that for 20 people altogether or 15 people altogether, you got 1,500. And I think most years, the church in Washington State, which is Bob's home church, has kicked in another 3,000 or so. But that is more than enough medicine sometimes. They just keep them for the next trip. So, anyway. You guys want to do, we wanted to do some question and answers. We hope there's questions. Sure. Kathy, you want to talk about Fit for Dia? That is that, yeah.
So, yes, we went to Cofardia, which is a church. I don't know if you saw the picture up there. There was kind of dark, but they were playing soccer on this little turf field. They have 350 kids that come to this compassion center, and they're sponsored kids through child sponsorship. We actually went to a church service there, and the pastor and his wife, they're just so vibrant. You guys would love them. They're doing a really good work there. We're reaching out in their community through the soccer field. There was a couple testimonies of people who stood up. It was sort of an appreciation service for Bob and Evelyn when we were there. And they stood up and gave testimonies of how their lives had been changed through the child sponsorship. One lady who was telling us that she had lost her husband and her daughter has, I believe it's leukemia, but is going through treatment that is sponsored through the church, paying for that and the sponsorship program. So that's very thriving right now from everything that we could see. It was a very, very positive place and definitely thriving.
Any other questions? Yeah.
So we took a suitcase of blankets from our church here, and then the church from Washington sent a suitcase of blankets. So this is their winter time, so they very much appreciated, even though to us it was 70 degrees and beautiful, for them they were freezing. So they really appreciated the blankets. So we tried to give any babies 6 months and under, or pregnant moms, we gave them blankets. And I had just taken a little fun little doctor's kit for the kids to play with if we had a little downtime waiting for the docs. So they loved that. They thought that was really fun.
These are pictures coming out of Azavache, coming back down towards Don Lee. You were in the clouds for part of it.
We were riding in the back of a truck also, so it's a little, they're not quite as clear as they could be. I think Joe had a question.
Yeah. I think it is. I think the economy is picking up a little bit. I heard from some of the locals there. Actually, that whole trip down from Azavache, I talked to two gentlemen. One was a pastor from the mountains. He had come all the way in on his day off. And he would go up, and he was one of the pastors that would pray with the people. But their economy has picked up a little bit. Apparently, this is what he was telling me. He said, apparently, the current president of Honduras is good friends with President Trump. And his particular interest is in Don Lee. So we saw an area of the country where the current president of Honduras apparently likes to drive toward. They're redoing that entire highway for 2.5 hours, and they're reaching out in that whole area. So you can see they're pumping money into that whole area of Honduras. I asked why or how he even knew President Trump, and what the connection was with that, and that's just fun and interesting. He said, well, the current president of Honduras had a brother who was a drug lord in Honduras, and President Trump, I don't know what he did. He ended up putting him in jail. He was able to help give that president the resources to put his brother in jail, and for that reason, he likes President Trump pretty well. So anyway, that's the story, but the two brothers didn't get along, and one's in jail now, and the other one's president, so...
Yeah. It is. Also, just as a reminder, too, I don't know if you guys remember this from before, but this Donley area, before the church stepped in, was notoriously known for drugs. People did not want to go anywhere near this Donley area. And the church started evangelizing, and it has taken off and just exploded. And so for me, when I go through there, I think, this is what God's doing.
That's the lady who lost her husband, and that was the little girl with cancer right there.
Another interesting story of what I thought about up in the mountains wise, when you logistically, they build a lot of churches because they're not mobile. For us, I know some drive from the West End to here. Some are driving from Mount Pleasant Mills to come here. You wouldn't see that in Honduras. If they can't walk it within a couple miles, that's about as far as they come. If they're walking 5 miles, and they will, they'll walk 5 miles to church just long enough that church gets big enough. They don't grow by addition. They'll go plant another church because it's closer, less distance for them to walk. So it's not uncommon for them to see a lot of churches, but when they get to see about 60 people, they're automatically building another church. Yeah, they'll come a long ways for the clinic, miles, 10 miles, I think 14 miles on the one, you know. But there's not clinics at all, so you're bringing one clinic to a town they're hearing of, they're going to come. But for churches, church-wise, if... They might be, like, I think in Donley itself, there's 7 or 8 Nazarene churches now. And that's within a town of probably, I forget how many thousand people, 30,000 snook, 40,000. But it's 40,000 of like a beehive. They're not real spread out. You're not going to find yards like we see here. If you see a house here with a yard going down Main Street or something, you'd have 3 or 4 other houses sometimes in that area because it's just one on top of another in like the Tegucigalpa or something. So they don't grow by building a big church. This would never, I mean, maybe in Tegucigalpa. I don't think we've been in our biggest church in Tegucigalpa. I've never seen a church this big. I've never seen a church probably as big as back to the drop there. That's the biggest church I've been to in Honduras was... Not even back to that drop right there. They build another one like that. And as a result, they're growing like crazy. So, if you're asking me, you're just getting an opinion. But I would say it's hard to beat the organization of Bob and Evelyn. And I say that to brag on them, but I think I try to be a realist about things. They're very organized. They and that can be done as well, but I don't see the same organization mixed with, I mean, they certainly have passion, but you kind of need to mesh the two sometimes to work in a, and grow it in like an organization would. Snook. Yeah, here, come on up.
So definitely it's catching on that if we help each other, we're going to get further along. Maybe not monetarily wise. I mean, they're not there yet, but the light bulb has gone off that we will go help build another church, you know, the people themselves. So I myself see in the last, what have I been going, 14, 16 years, yes, it's improving that way. Oh, yeah, more than monetarily, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I was impressed how they had pastors come out of the mountains on their one day off that they had off and going up to another spot in a different part of the mountains just to help pray. So there's definitely a good network of that.
I think medically wise, we talked to a local doctor there, not this trip, but last year when we were there, and he expressed to us if it was not for American teams coming over, they would not basically have any health care that they could get. So they really, really, really depend on, medically wise, they depend on us, teams going over to help. But like Snook said, every year we've gone, we see more and more pastors taking the time and coming with us and readjusting their schedules for that spiritual support.
Do you guys want to know how it works medically wise, their health care? Okay, so their health care, they consider it socialized medicine. What happens is if you contribute, kind of like a Social Security tax, okay, if you contribute to a health care tax, you get some of that health care benefit back. That right there, because of the economy in Honduras, right now, at least the statistic-wise, 9 out of 10 people don't have health care through their socialized health care. So unless you're paying out of pocket, Kathy couldn't go with us to the Cumayagua one down the southern part by the ocean there, but that was a prime example. We had a kid, Victor, who was within a day or two of probably dying, came in, hadn't eaten for 4 days, was carried in. He was 10 years old, but he had a medical condition that didn't allow him to really grow very well. He was probably three, four feet tall maybe. I mean, he was very small, but it's hard to tell because he couldn't walk. He would be carried everywhere. But today he's in school, and what happened was when he came into the clinic, We had a nurse there that was visiting that day that wouldn't have been able to visit because of the rain. I don't know if you remember any of that stuff, but it was good timing for her to be with us in that clinic. She worked in the ER there. We got in the back door of the ER that way, basically to the front of the line, and they said, yes, he definitely needs fluids. He's completely dehydrated. Here's what you need. You need fluids. You need Similac, basically, formula. You need a couple different things, and we're willing to give it to them. That's the way their ERs work. So you then take that script from the ER, you go to something that looks like a Costco or a Walmart, much smaller than that, but it's basically like that. They have a pharmacy inside a lot of those places, or if you can find a pharmacy, you go in there and say, here's this, I need a bag of saline. Crazy. They have IV tubes at the hospital, but they don't have saline. If you want saline, if you want any medicines at all, you go to the pharmacy at Walmart, you get these products, you bring them back, and we'll administer to them. That's their health care. That's their socialized medicine. So we paid out of pocket, and we were able to get him going. Some things are much cheaper there, of course, but formula wasn't. It was $45 U.S. dollars for a can of formula. And but that was, I think, 18 servings. And he was so malnourished that they gave it to him half at a time. So he got 36 servings out of that one can. And I know that since that time, there have been people who have really given a lot. And he's currently doing well in the school and learning and with it, you know. And but I say that to say, healthcare-wise, if you do get health care, and that was if we moved them to the front of the line and paid cash and everything else, you still have to go get your medicines. So 9 out of 10 Hondurans don't have health care at all. And in Crystal, they can go to the ER and they'll get a bill, but if they have a wound that's going to, they can't afford to go have wound care done typically at all. So they just wait until the point where they lose the leg, goes gangrene or something, and they have to take it off. It's just a once and done surgery, and so they don't have wound clinics per se, unless you have the money. So anyway.
We have a song to close with that Dory actually sent to Crystal and I right before the trip, and it was just really meaningful and special to us, so I hope you enjoy it too.